Welcome to Growth Marketing Camp, a podcast powered by OpenSense, where we sit down with leaders and founders from diverse backgrounds in marketing, tech, and beyond to explore what it takes to build a leading brand that's shaping the world of B2B. Let's get into it.
Hey, everyone. This is Jazz Bidding, co-host of Growth Marketing Camp, and I'm very excited to welcome this week's guest, Nick Bennett, Director of Evangelism and Customer Marketing at Alice and the host of Rep Your Brand podcast. Nick, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I was actually, I was sharing a little bit when you joined the call. I absolutely love your hat. So can you just tell everyone where you got your hat from? Because I know people are going to be curious when they see your fit.
Yeah, so I launched a merch line last week with a company called Mavens of Merch. And so if you're interested in anything, I have my podcast, Rep Your Brand. I have Haters Hate, Creators Create on there, all different things. So just head over to my LinkedIn profile and click the resource tab at the top. You can find it.
Yeah, we'll definitely link the tab because I was telling you, like, it's hard to find merch that you'll actually wear. But surprisingly, I don't know if you, maybe you were you at Inbound?
So I didn't go to the conference, but I went to the Chili Piper event.
Got it. What was the Chili Piper event?
They just did it at like a brewery, and it was like them and a bunch of other companies. It was like the like a SaaS award type thing, but it was fun because it was literally everyone at Inbound that like you see on LinkedIn for so long. And it was like great to finally meet people again.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I was at Inbound with the team, but I was talking to Yelena about it. She shared with me a bunch of people that were going to be there, people that we've interacted with that have been on our podcast, other companies and marketers that we want on our podcast. And it was just so trippy to actually walk through the conference and recognize people. I was kind of felt like a creep because I know these people because I see them on my feed. I'm interacting with them. And then you're finally seeing them in person. And it's just a weird feeling, but it feels awesome when you actually get a chance to talk to them. And it's like, hey, you're just as cool as, you know, I thought you were on LinkedIn.
Exactly. And those people, it's funny because I also had this conversation with someone that is a good friend of mine. And they were like, there was people that I met in person at Inbound that I followed on LinkedIn for years. And they are not the same person. Like they basically fake who they are on LinkedIn and they act completely different in real life. And I was like, what's the point of doing that?
So that, okay. So hopefully people never think that when they meet me. But 100%, like I've actually even like not at Inbound, but there have been experiences where I think all of us have had that, where you talk to someone and it's like they seem kind of flat and dry, but when you meet them in person, they're so much better. And then obviously the opposite, right? You'll meet some people and they're much worse than how they present themselves.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad that you did go and you had fun. Talk to me a little bit about what you do currently at Alice and what Alice is exactly.
Yeah, Alice is a B2B gifting platform. So think direct mail, gifting, how do you break into accounts, accelerate deals, surprise and delight customers, does the whole gamut there. And I was actually a previous customer of Alice's years ago. And so I stayed in touch and I ended up joining a little over a year and a half ago now. And so originally I was here to build ABM from scratch. That's kind of my background, field marketing, ABM. And so I did that and then moved into more of a field marketing role and community, which is also near and dear to my heart. And then about 3 months ago, maybe 4 months ago now, I was asked to take on customer marketing, like retention and like the evangelism piece. And so right now what I do is focus on retention through a variety of tactics and strategies, but also the evangelism piece. So getting Alice more brand awareness by doing podcasts, going to events. I've been creating content for 2.5 years now. So being able to just get the name out there, which it was already had a very strong name in the out there, like people knew the brand. It's more so amplifying that.
Got it. So you touched on a couple of things that I do want to talk about. First, your experience with ABM. I'm a little curious about that. Then we'll transition into customer marketing. Based off of your experience with ABM, especially for a lot of B2B companies, is it still a hot thing? Because you end up seeing like trends of ABM. I know, you know, about 2-3 years ago, that was the biggest thing. Now I'm starting to see chatter on LinkedIn that, hey, it doesn't work. There's other things that you should invest in. Is it just as strong now as it was before? And are there things that you think B2B marketers have just been sleeping on that they should actually, you know, incorporate into their ABM campaigns to make them more successful.
Oh man, I love this topic because, you know, I don't want to say I got roasted a couple of weeks ago, but like I posted that ABM is just a buzzword. At its core, it's targeted marketing to a subset of accounts. And people were like arguing with me that it's a methodology and like that it's a company-wide initiative. And I said, I get that. Trust me, I do. But ABM was just years ago. It's like, it shouldn't just be marketing. Account-based marketing just makes it seem like, okay, so it's just marketing doing its thing, but where does sales come in? Where does RevOps come in? Where does CS come in? How do you impact across the entire buyer's journey so that it's more relevant and thoughtful? And so it was funny because I was just like, you know, why are you coming at me with this? And I think ABM is still a thing, and I join a lot of prospect calls and customer calls, and they'll say, hey, I want to use gifting and direct mail for ABM to break into my top accounts. I say, great, what's your ABM strategy? And they'll all give me different answers, like, oh, my CEO says we should be doing this, or our sales team gave us 300 accounts to go after, or we just want to invite key accounts to events, but that's it. So like, it's not a like holistic strategy of everything encompassing it. You're using it as more of a silver bullet, and you have to think of it as an amplification to the other channels that you're running. And so, you know, I don't want to say that it's a buzz. To me, it's a buzzword. It's something where field marketers have been doing ABM for years. Like I'm a traditional field marketer as well. And so when you think about it, field marketers are usually broken up into territories, regions, or segments. And so you're working with a very specific sales team and you're going after target accounts in that industry or vertical, whatever. It's like, that's what ABM was for, you know, last 20, 30 years. The one thing that I do think people are sleeping on now, and I've been creating more and more TikToks recently because I've been trying to do more video. And I think it's influencer marketing in B2B. I think that as we end 2022 and go into 2023, you're going to start to see more and more companies start to invest into influencer marketing and not just going with the big, you know, 100,000 plus people that are on their list, but like the macro and kind of micro influencers as well that probably are in that like 10 to 50K range. Especially on LinkedIn, like you could do a lot of cool things. And I've fortunately been on both sides of it. I have been on like in programs with other companies, and I've also run my own campaigns with other people. And so I feel like it's been really interesting to test with and experiment. And the results have been phenomenal, at least for the programs that we've run. Yeah.
Yep. For the programs Alice has invested in.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
How are you guys finding, because I know it's much, when you think influencer marketing, obviously traditionally we're thinking like Instagram, right? And there are tons of platforms that have like Instagram influencers where you can sign them. How is Alice finding the right influencers to leverage for your guys' campaigns?
Yeah. So I think it's fortunate where I have a pretty big network. And so I can tap into a lot of those people that I've built relationships with. I'll give you a good example. So Devin Reed, who is ex-Gong now at Clary, good friend of mine. And so we partnered with him on his newsletter. And so not only on his newsletter, but I said, Devin, like, what can we do beyond this to create content together? We both have been creating content for years. And so we're putting together actually a bunch of like other pieces on top of that, both video and written. And so his audience is the exact people that we go after. So it just made a lot of sense. And we partnered with other people that have similar audiences that go after, you know, marketers as well as salespeople. And they've been well, like the amount that you'll spend on some of these like campaigns are a lot cheaper than running like paid ad campaigns, especially on LinkedIn now.
Mm-hmm. So for a company, I'm asking selfishly, by the way, for a company that may not have built kind of the, so Alice is leveraging your community right now. I mean, right. A lot of it is maybe not totally, but they're definitely able to leverage the community you have built, and you've built quite a community. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But for a smaller, for another company who maybe hasn't invested in community building, how can they find those, you know, influencers beyond, right? If they don't have a personal connection with them, is there a singular place, or is just kind of like listening to people on LinkedIn and just reaching out to them?
Yes. So I think social media is a big piece of it. And so it's funny enough, I've talked to like, I would say a handful of people in the last couple of weeks who have told me that they're building a platform for B2B, like different people, like this seems to be top of mind for a lot of people. And so they're building a platform for this, specifically for B2B, to find the right people for the right industry, the right size. Like it just kind of like connects you. And I feel like B2C already has this in a lot of cases, and they've like, they've been doing it forever. And like B2B is now just starting to get into that. And I think that, again, as we move into 2023, I think you're going to start to see platforms pop up, easier ways to get connected with the people that you want to. But to be honest with you, like you would be surprised at how many people, like say you had like a list of five people that you wanted to reach out to. You shot them a DM on LinkedIn. I guarantee you probably most of them, if not all of them, would respond. Like it's, I feel like it's a lot different than B2C. Like people are more willing to have those conversations and like be open to doing things like that, depending on like what your ask is.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, and you probably have a pulse on it. So maybe after this conversation, I'll get you to give me the list of people that you think are worth reaching out to. Because here's the thing, what we've done at OpenSense in the past, you know, sponsored newsletters. Sometimes you'll build a full campaign around, and I'm not going to drop some of the newsletters we've sponsored in the past, but it just falls flat. Nothing comes out of it. So then you wonder, you know, but these are newsletters that have been around for a very long time that almost like they're kind of, it's like, it's time for them to just, you know, set off into the distance and you don't have to worry about them anymore. But I do understand how engaged people are with some of the other like LinkedIn influencers that I've seen, because I am incredibly engaged with the ones that I follow. So I do see value in that. In terms of like, you mentioned Devin Reed, what kind of content are you kind of giving him to be able to like, you know, tie it back to Alice? Is it very promotional? Because I also, I'm trying to tie it back to what I've seen on Instagram and other influencers. And it's like, you kind of have to mold the content to fit that person's style. But any tips for people getting started?
Yeah. So we try not to make it like promotional, like salesy at all. Like I'll give you a good example, because we just switched our CTA this past week. And so we just released a brand new playbook called Outbound Love. So like, our goal is to make direct mail and gifting part of your outbound marketing strategy. So we created this entire playbook called Outbound Love, because we want to make outbound love, because people hate it right now. Like no one likes to be cold called, emailed, you know, spammed, all that stuff. So how do you make it as part of an amplification to those other things that you're doing? And so we dropped that link with some really creative copy at the beginning of it. And I UTM'd the link, and like it blew up. Because the newsletter goes out every Saturday morning. And so like I checked it yesterday, and it was phenomenal how many people clicked into it. And it was an ungated version. So we don't really gate any of our content either. So it's on a conversational page. So you could drop your email, but you don't have to do that. And I think it was a great way to get people to learn more about the resource. And another one that we've done with him specifically is promote our product tour. So get people to like want to like play around with the product that I've built, so that they can try different things without having to talk to sales.
Yeah. Yeah. I love both of those ideas, by the way. I've completely ignored the couple of questions that I had because you definitely sparked my interest. So I'm going to do a little bit more digging after this call, just for myself. Yeah. You mentioned you guys built a playbook. So first of all, before I even go into a few more questions, I am curious, what does your team look like at Alice?
Yeah. So right now we have about a 10-person team, I believe. And so we have, you know, two product marketers, couple creative people, our head of marketing. So I'm on the customer marketing side. And then our revenue marketing team has, you know, events, SEO content, growth, which manages our paid and organic as well. So we have a pretty, it's not a huge team, but we actually do everything in-house ourselves. So we pride ourselves on being able to do that, because that's, you know, we're a scrappy team. We can make a lot happen. And I feel like we've gotten a lot of people to know who Alice is and like what we do by not having to like, you know, go like out of our way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you're focusing a lot on retention and evangelism for your customers. Talk me through some of the strategies that you guys are launching that have been most successful this year.
Yeah, so I'm first off, I've never done customer marketing before. So like this is all new to me, which is why the community piece, which again we could talk about, comes into it, because like I've had to rely on other people that I know who are customer marketers and have been doing it for 10 years to like ask questions, bounce ideas off of. And that's been really crucial for me. Like the big focus for me is a couple things. So reviews. How do we increase reviews specifically on G2? How do we release new customer stories? As a marketer, like everyone, you know, you have these case studies, and I feel like case studies are so fluffy. Like who puts out bad case studies? Like you're never going to say your product's terrible or anything like that. But instead of doing a regular case study, I said, I want to do a tactical playbook from our customers. So like, if someone, you know, I'll give you a good example, Sixth Sense, they're a customer of ours. And so like they've had incredible success. So I want to capture that success and tell others what campaigns they're running, how they're running these campaigns step by step with pictures and everything so that they can go run these playbooks for themselves. So not only does that help with retention, but it also helps on the acquisition side. And then the last thing is customer comms. So like just, you know, doing regular updates across, you know, in-app messages, email, social, all these things to make sure that everyone knows of all the integrations that we have, product updates. We release a lot of new features regularly. So making sure that, you know, our user base understands all that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved the playbook example instead of a case study. I am totally going to take that idea. This is such a great conversation. Oh my God. Second of all, you know, you mentioned that you're a 10-person team, and I understand that you're the first, like it's your first time doing customer marketing. How often are you having to interact with the other other teams at Alice, like the product team, right? Engineering team, so you can understand the features and the integrations. Is that something that you're regularly doing so that you can build it into your own strategies?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's something where, you know, product, CS, our account management team, the rest of the members of the marketing team, especially like our growth and kind of design team, is very important, our product marketing team to spin up different things as well. And again, being a team of one on the customer marketing side, there's like a million things that I want to do and that I realize we have to do. However, you're a team of one, and it's okay to be able to say no to things and focus on the things that you know will make an impact. And so being able to be lockstep, especially we have a brand new VP of CS. And so her and I have really formed an incredible relationship since she's been here about the last month or so. And so we, you know, we have everything perfectly planned out. We know where we want to go in 2023, but again, it's laying the foundational framework to make sure that we're going to be successful when we get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that, because, you know, typically I think especially startups, when they think about customer marketing, I feel like typically you're not going to hire someone, especially when you're just starting out, you're a much smaller team, maybe a team of five people or whatever. Is that something worth investing in and thinking about to actually have someone fully hired to help with retention and help with customer marketing initiatives? Or is that something that you think most, you know, mature B2B organizations should probably think about?
Yes, it's funny. I actually wrote a post on this yesterday because I think that it's so important to actually focus on the reason being, like we're in a down market, like recession, whatever you want to call it. Like it's going to be cheaper to retain your current customers than it is to acquire new ones. So why not put a resource there that will help not only, you know, help retain, educate, inspire, but also grow these accounts, expand them, and then focus on like what you can do to make them become advocates on your behalf so that you're helping out on the acquisition side. And so I think, I mean, regardless of company size, I think it's something where you should, whether it's a full-time resource or like split in time, there should be someone that has the retention piece as part of like their job responsibilities, regardless of company size, because I do think in this market, it's incredibly important.
Yeah, yeah. I'll definitely take a look at that post because, yeah, you definitely brought up a very, very good point. And now let's just rewind a little bit and go back to that post that I was talking to you about before we hit record. This is how I learned about you, Nick. but you had, and I'm sure our listeners most likely have heard about you, followed you because of this as well. I definitely did. You had a post go viral on LinkedIn around G2 reviews. I've also heard there's been a couple of posts that I'll talk to you about a little bit later around G2 that I've also been floating around recently. So we'll touch on that in a bit. But you drove 73 new reviews in about 2 days talk me through that, and then talk me through kind of the chatter that happened in your comment section and the differing opinions, and just share with me why you think people were like aggressively like they loved it, and then some people were really angry about it. So talk to me about what you learned from that too.
Yeah, so you know, I feel like with G2 reviews, it's something where everyone usually waits till like the end of the quarter, and then it's like you're like, oh crap, like the report's coming up. I need to go get reviews. And so I did the same thing, and I now have a better process to do this monthly. But so my goal was like, all right, great. How can I go capture people that have left an NPS review in the product in the last 90 days? So I went to our engineering team. They pulled me a list of everything. So it was nice and easy for me to read. I just basically uploaded that into Marketo. And then I personally, from me, I wrote it. It came from me. I sent an email that said, hey, you know, I would love to send you a gift, you know, for an honest review. I don't care if it's good feedback, bad feedback. You have to have a solid product to be able to get feedback one way or another, and hopefully good feedback. So I sent that out to, it was a couple hundred people, and we ended up getting so originally it was 73 in 2 days. That actually ended up expanding to about 83 over the course of like a week and a half. There was people that trickled in like each day, and it was really nice. And so I just said, hey, listen, leave the review and I will send you an Alice gift in return. And I promise it won't be a gift card. However, you could exchange it for a gift card if that's what you want. But I want to show, one, the power of the product so that people can like say like, oh, wow, you know, you're usually always gifting. Now I get a gift in return and it's personalized to me. And so I just basically sent each person a gift. They accepted or exchanged it or donated the value to a charity of their choice. And we just saw so much success from it. And actually our fall G2 reports were like through the roof. We ended up getting like 37 or something badges like that. And it was a really great way to do it. And I'm now doing it where I can automate it on a monthly basis so I don't have to wait till the end of the quarter, but we'll see how Q3 stacks up. So I posted about it, and I didn't tell anyone internally I was going to post this. And I literally shared my email that I use, which wasn't earth-shattering, super basic. I shared exactly what I did step by step. And I just focused on like hopefully helping one other person. I didn't expect a post like that to go viral. And I've had a few go viral over the last 2.5 years. And it's always the ones that like you never expect, to be honest with you. And the amount of people, there were so many people that loved it. They were like, oh, I'm stealing this, or I'm tagging people. And that post ended up getting almost 500,000 views on it, which was crazy. And so I had a lot of people on the other side who were calling me unethical, that I was doing something wrong. The amount of people that DM'd me and like harassed me, especially competitors of other companies that were like, can't believe you're doing this. Like, I'm going to get you fired. I was like, what is going on? And I've been creating content for a while. I understand as soon as you hit posts, there's always going to be people who don't like what you write, but I've never gotten it as bad as like this time. And I was just like, listen, like, it's not like I'm paying someone to say, hey, I'm going to give you a gift, but you have to give me a 10, like, or 5 or whatever the number is. Like, I'm giving you a gift in exchange for honest feedback. And if you're a B2B marketer and like you think this is not happening, then you have like other bigger issues that you need to figure out first, because this is something that every company that I've gotten about 10 of them in the last like month and a half from other companies asking me for the same thing in giving me a gift card or giving me something. And so it was really interesting to see. Like I said, I just wanted to help one person, and I didn't expect it to go as big as that, and to have as many people, one, be on the fence of loving it, and then two, being on the fence of hating it.
Yeah, that is okay. So I have some thoughts. First off, I loved it. I screenshotted it because I was like, hey, I'm going to tap this idea. Second of all, I am shocked that you did get the kind of hate that you did. And I was reading, a lot of people did say it was unethical. And it's like, I'm sorry. Are you not on G2? Are you not on Terpera? Are you not on SourceForge? Like, either you've never done a review campaign before, or you've never reviewed a product, because I will tell you, even, you know, what we're doing, there is no way anyone's going to send out a campaign to their lowest NPS scores, right? You're strategic about who you send out these your emails to. And even the gifting, like, it's ingrained in the companies that have built out these, you know, these review platforms, which I found bonkers. So I'm thinking they need that haters. They need that because they were probably, you know, just annoyed that they haven't seen the results that you have. So
exactly. Yeah. And there was one person that tried to like extort me. It was weird. Like literally was like, you need to hire my company to fix this for you right now. I was like, fix what? And like, he was like, I'm going to the FBI. And I was just like, dude, you are absolutely crazy.
That is, I'm so sorry that you went through that. I really am. But I'm glad that you shared that, because if it ever happens to any of us, we'll know. We'll know that it's okay. You know, Nick was okay. Everything ended up being okay. No one needs to extort us. We don't have anything to be scared of. So I really appreciate you sharing that story. I had another, so I've had a couple of, I've been on LinkedIn and I've been reading a few other posts. So I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on this. There was a post that I read. I don't know who wrote it. And there was a lot of chatter underneath it as well about, you know, some of these review sites, they almost give these badges like candy now to everyone. And there's, you know, what used to be kind of a sign, an actual badge that could differentiate you from others is now every single, well, we know, right? We go to websites, everyone's doing it. So kind of curious, do you think that's something that holds a lot of value now, or are there other things that people can do to show the value and credibility in their platform and their product beyond, like, I feel like the weight that badges and stuff used to hold, they don't hold them anymore, yet people still include them just because they've always.
Exactly. And well, you know, taking a step back, like, no one should 100% solely buy based on a review site. Like, and if people think like that's literally like, if I was to get a demo today and like go to G2 and like that's it, like, I think there's a bigger issue in the buying process. Like, most people are, you know, leveraging peers, networks, communities is a great way. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I don't even go to review sites to look at products. Like, I will post in a community and I will ask about 5 close friends that I know that are in tech. And I will say, hey, what do you use for XYZ? And I'll take that list. I'll go get a demo from 2 or 3 of those companies, maybe 4 if there's a big spread. And then I will pick one of those companies based on what my friends and what my network says versus what, you know, other places say. Like, I don't even half the time go to the website. Like, again, I trust the people that I'm connected with and the communities that I'm into. Like, they've done the research, they've done all of this. And so like, they're sharing their experience with me. And I think that's the way, I mean, every, you know, dark social, that whole thing. Like, I think that's the way people are buying now.
No, definitely. I even think about myself. If I've ever researched a tool or a tech that I'm interested in, it has never, you know, come from like a G2 badge or Capterra. It's never come from there, although I do love G2, but it definitely has not come from there. It's come from Substacks of people that I'm following, that I've been following, you know, their newsletter for a while, and I trust them. I trust their opinion. I don't know them personally, but I've been following their journey for like, you know, a couple of years. It's come from some of the big, you know, influencers on LinkedIn, people that have built a community. It would even come from people like you, right? If I see that you recommended a product, because I follow you and I trust you based off of the credibility you have built, I will trust that and I'll actually go and I'll do a demo. So you're right. You know, you forget, even especially marketers, there was a conversation that I had recently, and it's like, Travis Tyler had it recently and shared it on one of his podcasts, but you are your ICP. What would you do? How are you exploring new technology? Do that. And what you shared is 100% that, especially maybe not like traditionally what people have done in the past, but like, I'm feeling like our, like the kind of the community now and the kind of people that are creating right now, that's what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. And I think like, you know, there's still lots of people that will leverage like, you know, a G2 or Capterra or whatever to like, as part of their buying process, which, yeah, you know, definitely go check it out, but like, don't put like all of your weight into like, just like, you know, that or like their website or whatever. Like, it's still, I think it's still like, we, again, people buy from people. And if you can experience that buying process with others that you trust that have gone through it and that you value their opinion, I think that outweighs really anything else.
Yeah, 100%. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about you. You're also a fellow podcaster like myself, but for your own podcast that you founded, Rep Your Brand. Tell me the origin story of this podcast. What sparked this and when did you start it? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it'll actually be 2 years in January. And so it was more something where, funny enough, I had a company approach me and they were like, hey, we would love to do a podcast on your behalf and like you be the host. And they gave me like, you know, some ideas, and it was around like personal branding. How do you open doors for other marketers that you never thought were possible, really? And so for me, I was like, great, this is a way to interview people like, you know, Justin Welsh, Chris Walker, Dave Gerhardt, people that have been doing this for years and years that I could then take that information and one, share it with everyone, but two, implement a lot of what they suggest and recommend and build those relationships with them as well. And it was really fantastic. I mean, we've now done like 40 something episodes, I believe, and we're going to actually be going through a rebrand of the show early next year. And so the goal is to take it from personal branding, which I feel like, you know, I don't want to say it's played out. Like a lot of people are talking about that. And I feel like it's sometimes like you just know, like things become stale. And so I want to really take it to a point where it's going to be focused on, I'll have a website, B2B marketers can go to this website and submit anonymous questions, like secrets, like, hey, I'm getting fired tomorrow. Like, what would you recommend I do if I've never done XYZ before? Things like that. Like, or if you need career advice, marketing advice, audience building help, like whatever. Drop these anonymous questions in there, and then myself and I'll bring on like special guest hosts to like fireside chat it, and we'll just really riff on it for like 20 minutes or so. And I think it'll be a fun way to like kind of like reignite that flame a little bit. I don't want to say I lost it. It's, you know, it's still something I enjoy. I just feel like, you know, 2 years, it's time to switch things up a little bit.
Yeah, I absolutely love that idea. So I think you should totally do it. And I'm glad that you are doing it. When you do, definitely share it with us, because we want to share it with our community 100%. I think it's a fantastic idea to go straight to the source. Yeah. And it's what a wonderful way to also source some of the best questions that people are thinking about. And also turn what could kind of end up most podcasts, right? They risk falling into like the interview, which even sometimes this has been like 8 months I've been doing this. In the beginning, I'm like, damn, like, Jazz, you need to stop question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. How do you turn it into a conversation? This feels more like a conversation because you're actually like getting my brain thinking about new things. And I'm actually, you know, I'm really interested in learning for myself. But I love that idea, and to bring in someone, an expert, I'm sure you're going to be very strategic about who you bring in depending on the question. I absolutely love that idea, and I'm very excited for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've been thinking about that for a while, and I thought of like creating a separate podcast about that. But I talked to the people that produce it for me, and they just said like, listen, why don't we pivot this? And I get a couple hundred downloads per episode still. And it's not the earth shattering, but I have a loyal base that listens to it. But I just feel like you know when it's time. You definitely know.
Yeah. So you've built a large community on LinkedIn. You're obviously still planning on reinvesting in that community. You've shared a little bit about the podcast, the rebrand. Where in your career journey did you go from just, you know, just being a marketer to all of a sudden just leveling up? And if you could go back in time, think about the changes that you had made. And I'm kind of curious when that happened, when that shift happened for you. Talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah. So I don't know if you follow Kyle Coleman from Clary at all on LinkedIn, but I used to work for Clary. He was actually my boss at the time. And we were in, I remember it was in, at the time, February of 2020, right before the pandemic like really hit. And like, we thought we would just be home for 2 weeks. And we were in Laguna Beach at our revenue kickoff, and we were chatting, and he was just like, he was telling me about everything that he's been able to do from LinkedIn. And like, he is, you know, he's crushing it there. And he's like, you know, why don't you talk about field marketing on LinkedIn. Like, you know, at the time, 650 million plus users, no one talks about it, like what the misconceptions are. It's more than an event planner. How does it play into a larger revenue organization? And I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. So he's like, I'm going to challenge you. And I love challenges. I'm big into sports. I'm very competitive. So when anyone challenges me to anything, I'm all in. And he's like, I'm going to challenge you to talk about this for 3 months. And I was like, all right, cool. And so I did it. And like, I didn't get any likes or comments really. It was like, I would get like a couple hundred views on each post. And I remember after 3 months, he's like, oh, you know, really good job. You stuck with it. I was like, yeah, but I'm not getting anything out of it. And he's just like, well, why not keep going? And I was like, all right, cool. And so it took me till 6 months of posting 5 days a week consistently before I saw any traction. And this wasn't even any great traction. It was literally just a little bump. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like now I'm getting like 2,000 views per post, like a couple comments, couple DMs, like this is fun. And then I just kept going. And it took me till a year before I saw like any like big upticks. And I was like, oh, cool. All right. This is what it was. And I was known as like the field marketing person. Like, hey, if you have field marketing questions, go ask Nick. Like I was doing podcasts specifically about field marketing and events around that. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then it allowed me to expand into ABM and personal branding. And just now I just talk about whatever I want. Like I have no filter. And I've been doing it now for 2.5 years. And like the doors that it's opened for me, both from a personal perspective, but also as a professional perspective, it's been fantastic. Like I have access to CMOs and VPs of marketing from like Fortune 500 companies that I would never get access to before. I can just send them a quick message and I'll get a reply back. And like being able to, one, not having to worry about using a resume again. Like I haven't updated my resume in a few years now. Like hopefully, and if not, I've done this completely wrong. But like, say I was to get laid off today, like I could post on LinkedIn, hopefully I would get a bunch of DMs offering me some type of job. And so that's the thing. Like, I don't want to use a resume. I don't want have to like worry about reorgs or my boss leaving or like anything like that. I'm trying to set myself up for like long-term success. And I think that LinkedIn and being able to create consistently for this long now has really played a piece. And it's interesting because I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I was like, you know, 2.5 years ago, there was so many other creators that were on LinkedIn that are nowhere to be found now. Like they just, it's what happens. People think that like, they just jump in and like, that's all they do. And like, they just post, and then they burn out after a year or so, or a year and a half, and like they disappear. And like there was a few people that I was close with 2.5 years ago that they're not even on LinkedIn anymore. They literally were just like, I couldn't take it. And it's not easy. It's you know, it's a grind, especially when it's not your full-time job either. And now not only do I create there, I have a Twitter, I have a TikTok, and you know, trying to really just double down on LinkedIn and TikTok right now. I feel like those are my top two, and just see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how you do it. So first of all, if you did, you know, I don't think you would, but if you did ever lose your job, you're 100% right, because I would have gone to our CEO and say, hey, this guy, like we need to have because yeah, you definitely know a lot of the stuff that you've been sharing has been very, very valuable. That's where you're attracting. Again, maybe you started with field marketing and ABM. Now, a lot of the people that are finding you, they're finding you because of like customer marketing stuff that you're sharing. I actually started posting a little bit, very inconsistently, like about a year and a half ago. Then I got a promotion and then I'm like, God, I don't have time for anything. And then it's like, you don't want to post for the sake of posting. Well, the way I see it, it's like, man, when something comes to me or I have an awesome idea or I have an experience that really moved me, then I want to share. But I've completely stopped. And I understand there's so much value in that. And we know it. I'll just take like Growth Marketing Camp, for example. We've been doing this now. This is going to be our second year. And we're finally seeing, you know, we'll be on LinkedIn and people are actually talking about, hey, you should check out this podcast. He's like, oh my God, wow. You know, people actually talk about us. And you're seeing, you know, what ended up being a much smaller snowball that took so long for it to get to shape up. Now it started, you know, the growth and the volume is so much, it's like it's magnified, right? Compared to how it was a year ago. How do people post every single day without creating content that even like you're not enjoying, you know, reading? Do you keep a log of stuff? Like if something hits you, you just you know, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's so, I mean, I completely agree with you that you shouldn't post just to post. And like, if there's things, and this is actually not the advice that I took initially, but it's what I give a lot of people now, is like, go find 10 to 20 other like-minded people that you want to learn from, that you know, that create content, and go comment on their stuff every day. Add to the conversation, add to the community, because what's going to happen, especially if you're one of the first people there, you're going to organically build that base back to your own profile without having to create content. Like, it's, you know, if you jump on a Justin Welch or Chris Walker, or, you know, one of those people's posts, and you're one of those first people and thousands of people see it, you probably would actually drive more likes from that comment than, like, especially early on, like a post of your own. And so it's something where if I could go back, I would actually do that now. And there's no list of, like, you know, I just scroll, and if there's content that's interesting, like, I engage with it. I don't have a list that I go by anymore, but there is people that I check out regularly. And, you know, obviously Chris is definitely one of them, and there's some others, but I just kind of like scroll at this point. I don't do a ton of scrolling anymore. It's more just trying to engage with everyone that it's commenting on my stuff, especially when I'm posting two times a day. My process is actually not, again, what I would recommend to people, but it's something that's worked for me for 2.5 years now. And so I don't write down anything. I literally each morning, I figure out what I'm going to talk about. And if it takes me longer than 5 minutes to write that post, I don't do it, because then I start to overanalyze, and you get into that over analytical mind where you're never going to actually hit post, because it's in your mind. You'll be like, oh, do people actually like this? And you're going to hit backspace, 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 type, 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 backspace, backspace, backspace. And you're going to just keep on doing that. And you're going to get into that same like cycle. And so I always told myself, literally, like, I work better by winging it. Like, if I wing my life, like, I don't really have much of a plan about anything, to be honest with you. And like, it's just worked out really well for me. However, I do not recommend that to anyone, especially starting out, because it's going to hurt you in the consistency side of it, because you're going to be like, oh, what do I talk about? And so, you know, drop it in your notes app, or drop it into Notion or Google Doc or something, or record, you know, send yourself a Slack or text message. Lots of things that you can do to be able to have that content. But one thing that I do think is very helpful to people is when you are engaging with these other people that you want to learn from, a lot of these comment sections are actually the best place to learn. It's a great way to learn, educate, and inspire, which will then actually hopefully help you create your own content if you're stuck or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of great insight in what you just shared. So one, you're at a point where you've built the muscle, so it's just natural for you. So I'm going to take a look at your LinkedIn later during my lunch break. And I'm just going to go through, I'm like, damn, it took him 5 minutes to write all of these. But 100%, like, I think in the very beginning, when you find your voice, especially if you haven't done this before, and you actually have a consistent, if you have find some sort of a theme, then we'll eventually get to your point if you're posting consistently, which is where I think you're starting to get to the less than 5 minutes. All right, let's run with it. I love that. That's awesome. Awesome advice. Last question, then we'll move into rapid fire, and then I'll let you go. What is one lesson in your career that has taken you the longest to unlearn?
I would say, don't be afraid to delegate. I have always been the type of person that likes control, and like being able to, like, if I have to rely on others, both personally, professionally, like, and I've played baseball my entire life. It's, again, it's like, you know, your team, like, I've always been a pitcher. It's like, you know, the game is in my hands. Like, I'm the one out there driving this. And like, it's part of the reason why I feel like I like that control, but I've realized that, like, you can't scale that way, and that it's okay for others to be able to take these things on. And like, do you have to coach them at times, especially if like they're on your team? You're like, yeah, maybe, but like, help them out. Like, everyone should be able to take on new things and learn, and just not have to rely on one person. Because what if you get hit by a bus tomorrow? Okay, no one knows what you're doing. You're basically, everything that you had in your mind is gone, because you didn't delegate, you didn't share with anyone any of that. And so I feel like it took me a while to figure that out. Now I'll delegate anything now. I don't care. You wanna like help me do something? Absolutely. Let's figure out a way to, you know, drop this campaign and like strategically think about it together. And it's been fun to like release that, take it off my shoulders.
I love that you shared that. I also, so when I came into the director role, I struggled with that, mostly for control, but also for, man, my, you know, my team is stretched thin. I don't want to give them another thing. I'll just do it myself. But I also read a tweet recently. It was from someone named Oded Raychavi. It's only a promotion if it increases a percentage of time spent thinking. And the amount of time that I have, that I'm scrambling to get stuff done, push them through the door. And I wonder, when am I going to get to the point where I can sit and really think, right? Think through certain new initiatives, planning for next year, right? For 2023, thinking through customer marketing initiatives. Because, you know, I know for sure our company could do a much better job reducing churn and supporting our success team. But the only way that's going to be possible is by being a little bit more strategic and delegating the work, not, you know, whether it's for control or not wanting to like stretch your team thin, then it's the power of saying no, which you posted today, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Your post from today, 100%, and it resonated with me. I'm like, I need to be way like, and especially the smaller teams where you've got a small, where you, and teams where everyone has an input. They all have ideas like, hey, we should go to this event. You know, the CEO will say, share, check out these three events, or, you know, someone else, another VP will say, check this out. And it's like, I cannot prioritize everything. And we've got our marketing engine that we have to continue to run. Beyond that, then we've got OKRs, right? We've got all this other planning to do. If I'm not allocating the work amongst my team and then using that, if I realize it's not possible, we can't get it done, give me more resources or give me more budget. Definitely, it has been my struggle this year, which I'm slowly starting to realize. Again, Nick, this has been the best conversation that I have had so far, because I am learning so much. And then, you know, feelings that I've had, you're just, you know, you're adding to some of the ideas. I'm like, okay, got to prioritize this. Love it. Such a good conversation. Mm-hmm. I know you've got a busy day and we're basically at the mark. So I've got rapid fire very, very quickly, and then I'll let you go.
Cool.
What is your favorite B2B brand? Why? And then B2C brand, why?
Ooh, B2B brand. I don't know if I, to be honest with you, I actually don't have like favorite brands, B2B or B2C. Like, I mean, I have brands I like, you know, Refine Labs, Gong, Clary. I mean, Alice, like there's brands that I like, and, you know, brands that make me laugh on like social media. On the B2C side, you know, there's company accounts that I follow on TikTok, like Duolingo, that like is like hilarious. And like, I wouldn't say I'm a favorite, but there's like companies that like, if they make me laugh, I enjoy them.
Yeah, I recently, the Winter's LinkedIn has made me laugh a couple of times. I like the YouTube post.
Yeah.
What makes you smile today?
Honestly, this podcast. I'm a big person where like I love smiling. I love laughing, because if you're not laughing, like you're not really living life. And so like I'm not a serious type of person. Yep. So.
Same. I'm not serious at all. And there are times where my husband be like, hey, you know, you just don't crack jokes. And I'm like, they're just don't crack jokes, man. Like, but he works in public sector. Like, you know, they're a little bit more like, you know, and I'm like, no, that whole tech is that. Like, I can crack jokes. I can swear too. What is your spirit fruit?
Oof. I don't know. I would say maybe like, like watermelon. I don't know. I've actually never been asked that question before.
Hey, that's the point of this podcast. We ask questions that people don't. Watermelon, why?
Yeah, I love the taste of it. I feel like it's such like a fun fruit. It's like juicy, and it's like, it reminds me of summer too. And it's like, oh man, I wish summer, because now it's getting cold. I turned my heat on for the first time this week.
Yeah, I think you're a watermelon. Especially because it's fun and vibrant.
Yeah.
And, no, I like it. I like watermelon for you. What is your favorite drink?
Honestly, I drink water most of the time. Although cold brew coffee, like, so I drink cold brew like every morning, and then I switch to water the rest of the day. But I just have like one cup of coffee in the morning, and then that's it. But I love a good like cold brew coffee, not like the generic crap.
Yeah, I love cold brew. I definitely need to love water. I have, you know, suffered from a bass, and I cannot figure out how to love water. Maybe the pH needs to be more balanced. What is a pet peeve you have?
Oh, when people pitch slap me on LinkedIn, and it happened by a VP yesterday, and it was so annoying, and I called them out on it. I said, come on, dude, you can be better than this. You're a VP. And I never got a reply back. So
I love that you share that. I cannot stand. I almost get scared when someone sends me a connection request because I'll be like, is this a tough person that's going to pitch slap me? And they always do. What title would you give this chapter in your life?
Risk, like just being able to take risks. Like I'm at a point where like I don't care if I lose my job tomorrow. And I feel like I've done a lot to set myself up for future success, and I'm okay with risks. I like taking on new challenges and like trying different things. And if it doesn't work out, like, hey, I'm still young enough that like it's not going to cripple me.
Yeah, I like that. If you could pick one superpower, what would you choose?
Ooh, teleporting. Like I would love to like. One, like I used to fly like 3 times a month and like do events, and like I don't even enjoy flying anymore. But like if I could just teleport from like here to like Vancouver or like Italy or something and like be there in like 2 seconds, that'd be so fun to me.
Yeah. Nightcrawler was my favorite X-Men. And yeah, I love the teleporting. Nice. Recently, though, I decided to change mine to being able to talk to animals because I'm like,
that would be fun.
Best way to wind down.
Scroll TikTok.
I love TikTok.
I usually do it at night. And just it's mindless. You don't even like really think about it. So
yeah. And then you get that. Stop. You've been scrolling for too long.
Yep.
<You know?
laughs>
I
exactly. Yeah.
What would your TikTok algorithm say about you?
Oh, I get like so much random stuff on my like FYP. Like I get like marketing stuff, and then I get like I was getting like those like the Bama Rush like college things for a while, like the dances, and then I get like teacher stuff randomly. It's all I literally don't even know how it gets on there, but I still watch endlessly. So
yeah, same. So I'm addicted to TikTok. I'll ball you. What is one thing you cannot live without?
Ooh, I'd probably say my cell phone. It's like I usually work a lot of it off of that. Like LinkedIn, I run off of there. I don't really use the web version. So like I don't even really need a laptop, to be honest with you, outside to do video like this. I could just honestly operate everything. And that's the beauty of like working remote and being in tech. It's like you can do answer Slack, emails, all that on your phone. So it's like, you know, it's important.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't live without my phone either. So we definitely have that in common. I feel like my phone is like an extension of my body now. Like it might as well just be an organ. What is one book you'd recommend to our audience and why?
So this funny enough, I actually don't read books. Some people like question me on that, but like I was never much of a book reader, even through like school. Like I was a very visual learner. And so I actually get, I would say the majority of my content, like sports, like tech, marketing, all on like LinkedIn, Twitter. Like I enjoy the social platforms to like give me the information that I need, as well as like events and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. And love that you share that. I know if I was on a show earlier and someone asked me, I'd be like, oh my God, what can I? Yeah. What do I say? I could have come up with like, you know, Seth Godin's book or something like that. No, own it. 100%. I have not read this year. I've got a couple. I feel like there's no time, but I could make time. I've got a couple of books. See, like I have a problem of going to the bookstore, grabbing my latte and like enjoying the, you know, selecting a book process. And then I put it on my desk and then it just collects dust. I'm going to get through them. I will get through them one day. Who inspires you or who should we invite on the show?
Ooh, you know, someone that I think is someone that has inspired me a lot is actually, funny enough, it's my boss. So like our VP of marketing. And so it's someone that I've known for years and he's a friend of mine. I brought him into the company, but he was a mentor to me for years. And he was VP of marketing at, you know, very large companies early on in his career. And he's helped me a lot. Outside of learning, like, you know, again, like a field marketing ABM, I get, and he's helped like open me up and like learn a lot more about like these other pieces of marketing. And not saying that I want to be a CMO or VP of marketing one day, but like it's helped me, I think, be a better overall well-rounded marketer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love it. And what was his name?
Pete Lorenko.
Okay. So maybe we'll wait for you to do the intro and we can invite him to the show as well.
Absolutely.
But thank you so much, Nick. This was a one of my favorite conversations. I have a handful that I'm like, man, I absolutely. So the conversation I had with Travis Tyler, I love that conversation. So you're definitely up there with Travis. I personally got so much value from it. I know our audience is going to as well, especially because, you know, when you're actually having a conversation and the stuff is not like rocket science and stuff that you could very easily do yourself. It's just, it's so like, it is phenomenal. There's ideas, there's notes that I'm planning on taking. You shared lots of value for me and our community. So thank you so much on behalf of Growth Marketing Camp. And how people connect with you and find you.
Yeah, so definitely LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. You know, reach out, happy, you know, send me a DM and happy to chat there. I tried to do a better job of saying no, because I was getting like 20 to 30 people wanting to like meet with me every single week. So I've just told people like, no, I'm not doing meetings anymore. And honestly, it's made me feel a lot better, but like, feel free to like DM me and ask me questions, things like that. I'm happy to reply to those.
Yeah. Oh, and just listen to this episode because you're going to get a lot of the questions you probably would have asked. Yeah. But thanks again, Nick. It was great having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Growth Marketing Camp. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you would give it a quick 5-star rating or share it with a friend or colleague looking to strengthen their skills with tips and inspiration. If you want to learn more about the company behind the show, head to opensense.com. That's OPENSENSE.com. We'll catch you on the next episode.